The LinkedIn messaging from people I don't know has gotten completely out of hand. So starting back in January, this lady sends me the, what are you currently doing to fill your calendar with calls from ideal prospects? Did you know that 80% of all B2B leads are found on LinkedIn?
Well, this is how you get them. It's like throwing spaghetti at a wall. Eventually something will stick.
Welcome to Touchpoint, a podcast dedicated to discussions on digital marketing and patient engagement strategies for hospitals, health systems, and physician practices. In this podcast, we'll dive deep into digital tools, solutions, and strategies that are impacting our industry today. We hope to share a lot of great information with you and have fun along the way. Thanks for joining us. Now, here are your hosts.
And welcome back to episode number 141. I am Reed Smith, joined by Chris Boyer.
Hello, Reed. Welcome to episode 141. Is that a prime number? Oh, no, we're not going to do that again.
Oh, no. I've already forgotten now what prime numbers are. What is that?
It's a number. It can only be divisible by one and itself.
No, you can divide this one by three. Well, welcome, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for joining us again for another week, another edition of Touchpoint. We certainly appreciate your support. Quick plug for the website over at touchpoint.health. If you would, if I could ask a favor, if you will surf on the interwebs over there, there is something called the TPS report. It is a weekly email that comes out every Monday morning with not a lot. I mean, it has a few things about Touchpoint, our episodes, but it's predominantly just some aggregated news that I think you would find interesting as marketing and communication professionals. And so we promise not to do anything else with said email address other than send you a weekly email. So sign up for that and check out some of the other shows and show hosts while you're there. Rate, review, subscribe over on Apple Podcast, which with the new operating system release, there's a whole new interface. Maybe more about that in recommendations. Let's take a quick break and then we'll be back and dive into the episode. Chris, in today's digital age, your online reputation, as we all know, is crucial. With customers relying on online reviews, your first impression is also compared directly with your competitors.
Sure is. And Reed, consider this. 86% of patients today read online reviews, and 73% demand that that healthcare provider has a minimum 4-star rating.
Demand. They demand it.
Yeah, they do.
Well, to stand out, choose reputation to help amplify your brand and to build trust. Be the provider of choice in your area, understand patient sentiment, get actionable insights, and even foster patient loyalty.
And look, here's the easy way you could do that. All you need to do is go visit reputation.com/touchpoint. That's reputation.com/touchpoint, where you can download their healthcare online reputation management guide and build a reputation that performs for you. Today's episode, Reed, we're going to focus in on digital transformation. Well, I think it's weird to say that because we've talked about digital transformation a number of times on this show. This is not a new topic for us to cover.
I feel like I probably should have re-listened to those episodes prior to recording this one. You're forewarned. It may be me saying a lot of the same things again. No, I'm just kidding. We did, though, however, talk just a few episodes ago about, I guess, the unsuccessful nature of digital transformation efforts.
Mm-hmm. That's where we pulled out the stat that 70% of digital transformation efforts are not successful.
Yeah, and I would guess that if you whittled that down and looked at just hospital and healthcare systems, is potentially higher than that, because I would guess there's not as many on that journey. And so I don't know, maybe it's lower because there aren't as many. Maybe they're getting it done. I don't know. But the point being is this just isn't a thing in hospitals, at least not with the way we think about it in other industries.
There's a lot of reasons why, and we've talked about them before, that digital transformation doesn't work. Siloed organizations, infrastructure costs. But that leads me to wonder that just in general, when it comes to digital transformation, are we just bad at digital transformation? Is that just something that is inherent? Is it still like experimental?
Maybe we're bad at it because we're not actually doing it. It's a term, right? We keep hearing this. It's like saying blockchain a lot or machine learning. You know, we like to just say things. I don't know that we've clearly defined digital transformation as a vertical very well to know it when we see it kind of a thing. And it's just a buzz term. You know, we use it to say, you know, oh, we have a chatbot now. You know, so we're on a digital transformation journey. Maybe you are, but I mean, you know, I think it's just a kind of an umbrella term to some degree.
And I also think that it's often used incorrectly. Just like many other things that we've talked about, digital transformation could be focusing on the wrong things. So today's episode, we're going to get into that a little bit. And we're going to first start by highlighting an article about the impact of digital transformation in healthcare by a company that, not surprisingly, a company that's called RSA. Are you familiar with the company RSA?
I don't think so.
They focus on helping organizations go through digital transformations. And more importantly, they focus in on risk and avoidance of risk in digital technologies. That's why the article that we're talking about is really focusing on the impact of digital transformation in healthcare, specifically on the risks associated with that.
So they talk initially about digital transformation as a priority, and they talk about that as a top priority across all sectors of the industry. It's not just in our world, we've got the blinders on a little bit. We may be talking about marketing communications, or people at least think we're talking about marketing communications. It's not just that. It's about improving patient care, even things like compliance or managing costs or rev cycle type stuff. It's not just about having a chatbot.
A lot of it too is focused on that sensitive electronic patient data, being able to transfer the data securely within your larger technology stack. And like you said, right, it spans across all these different industries, healthcare providers, insurance companies, pharmaceutical companies, medical device manufacturers. I mean, think about it, like even ambulatory services, biotech. I'm creating a long list here, but.
Well, and I think it's interesting to think about that it does create risk, but it has nuances in all those areas. So you mentioned providers and insurance, pharma, medical device, et cetera. But even just within the core space that we kind of participate in on the provider side, you've got FQHCs, to rural hospitals, to sole community providers, to regional health systems, to specialty hospitals, academic medical centers, to systems, et cetera, all kind of dealing with different pieces of that puzzle of how do they improve patient care and things like that.
Let's focus in on some of the risks that they have outlined in this article. They talk about three main areas where digital transformation really highlights risk. And I think it's important for us to look at, because more often than not, risk is what allows us, or which basically forces us, to maybe reevaluate if digital transformation is right for us. The first area that they're looking at is cyber attack risks. Knowing that data security is really one of the top priorities in healthcare organizations.
I remember having a conversation with John Mason, who was a host here on the network for a period of time, but has been a CIO his whole career at different size organizations. I remember him talking about cybersecurity as it related to, okay, we were thinking about things like email phishing attempts and then the kind of social engineering kind of stuff. But now with the Internet of Things, like, they have to be concerned with somebody hijacking an insulin pump or all these connected devices, right? And so it's a completely different scenario where, the IT department of old that helped you when your Outlook wasn't working, that's not really what they do now. I mean, I didn't even think about that, and so the complexity of what, they're dealing with is completely changed.
All these different devices, Internet of Things, the desire for consumers to want to start to use all these different technologies. And for us as digital professionals, it really becomes very difficult for people that are in the digital space to protect that, what they call the security perimeter, right? Because it's getting much bigger than just making sure Epic is locked down. The second risk factor, Reed, is related to the disruption of the traditional care model in which the patient visits the doctor's office or the hospital. Now, suddenly, things are much different.
And the most common thing we think about in this space is the use of telemedicine. So instead of you going to a physician's office, now we have people working in very different ways in the industry. In a lot of cases, more of a mobile workforce, I guess. And so you start thinking about like access and authentication and things like that. Again, kind of that technical space of people accessing data they shouldn't be. It was easier to control, I guess, when it was inside the brick and mortar walls and you kind of had everything locked down. And you knew who came and went in and out of what room. And
well, I was just talking yesterday to someone in our IT department, positioning the fact that what if you didn't need to log in to get to the intranet? Could you imagine a world of that where, you know, there's no authentication anymore? And really, that's kind of the world that we're getting to. Well, I mean, there is still authentication and two-factor authentication and all of those things. But what if I could use my Google password to get into the intranet or my Facebook credentials? This is the world now we're living in. Really, that disruption has not only been driven by us as individuals within the health system, but it's also being driven by the consumer. The consumer wants to text their doctor. They want to be able to maybe even send a direct message through Twitter to their clinic to change their appointment.
It's kind of like a be careful what you ask for, because the last piece they point to here is data privacy. As the healthcare system becomes more complex, and we just talked about the use of telemedicine and some different ways you may receive care, folks want their data to be accessible in all these different places. Well, the thing about that is then their data is accessible in all these different places, right? From multiple devices and locations and all that kind of good stuff. And people want control of their data, et cetera, et cetera. It opens the opportunity of it being lost or not secured correctly or whatever, you know, whatever it may be, which again is not ideal because there's some pretty sensitive stuff in there, you know, on the low end of the scale that's just maybe embarrassing, up to people steal your identity or whatever, you know, it causes and wreaks a lot of havoc.
Now we've created this complex world where the risk for cyber attacks is severe. The disruption in, you know, the traditional care model, that now we're starting to get multiple different data inputs and the consumer wants to access data differently. So now what we're doing is we're setting the table that digital transformation is pretty risky. After the break, though, Reed, I think we want to dive down into another factor of why we may be doing digital transformation incorrectly. And that's, as a little spoiler alert, because maybe we're actually not using the term digital transformation correctly. But let's dive into that after the break.
Coming soon from Greystone, Bowstring, and Touchpoint Media, live from HCIC, a new podcast that brings you front row access to the latest innovative strategies that are shaping tomorrow's healthcare industry. In this 12-part series, as recorded live at the Healthcare Internet Conference, we'll hear from industry experts such as Paul Mattson of the Cleveland Clinic, Kathy Smith of Roper St. Francis Healthcare, David Feinberg from Mount Sinai Health System, Rose Glenn from Michigan Medicine, and many others. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or your favorite podcasting platform. This podcast series is brought to you by Greystone.net, Bowstring, and Touchpoint Media.
All right, so now it's time to talk about how we aren't doing it correctly. And so this next article that we want to touch on, Chris, that you found, this is interesting to me. And I think we alluded to this even early in the show. Maybe we're not using that word, does not mean what you think it means. Kind of a thing was that the Princess Bride.
Exactly.
The name of this article is digital transformation just code for inefficient healthcare spending?
Ooh. That, by the way, that controversial headline was from the website medicaleconomics.com.
That's weighty.
Really good website, by the way. If you haven't gone out to it, they have some really good information about, you know, the intersection of some of the things that we're talking about with the financial aspects of healthcare. This article steps into it right away. It says, healthcare is a severe case of digital transformation fever.
There you go.
I think they need to go to some kind of telemedicine solution. Maybe they can prescribe a cure there. It says, though, that, you know, not every industry seems to have that bug nowadays, but that the term digital transformation may have become a blanket euphemism for modernization. And it can include everything from cloud computing, AI, machine learning, Internet of Things. I mean, it's just suddenly becoming now this buzz term that we've heard at a conference, that we've heard online, that we've heard industry leaders talk about, right?
They said it much better than I did, but that's what I was thinking, right? Was that I don't know that we're really doing digital transformation. We're just upgrading things. We have a new CRM, a new CMS. We've built the new thing and we're adding new widgets and components and functionality. Again, don't want to downplay that. That's all good stuff. And maybe it's part of a digital transformation roadmap. But yeah, I mean, I think we're using some words interchangeably that really aren't.
Well, let's even take it to a higher level, right? Because I've heard digital transformation being used kind of as the panacea for things like being consumer first or customer first or experience focused. We're going to do digital transformation because we need to be experience focused, or we need to do design thinking where we put the customer first in the experience. And we're going to do that through digital transformation. Now, you can't see it, but as I'm talking about these terms, I'm putting quotes around them because all of these things are so ill-defined. Like, what does that actually mean?
Right. We want a consumer first marketing strategy. And it's like, well, what other kind would you have? Like, I don't know. Isn't that just what that means? We've added undue or unneeded words to some of these definitions.
Well, and they're lofty, right? And they're kind of ill-defined. And they're, I mean, I get it. I'm all about customer first and experience focused and design thinking and all of that. But it's so like pie in the sky. Like, how do we even nail that down to a digital transformation project or an effort? Just because we want to do all these things doesn't mean that these are the ways that we're going to get there. And hopefully by the end of a digital transformation, we will be all of these things. But that doesn't necessarily guarantee that we are.
Again, defining these things is super helpful. And I don't think we need to, well, I mean, I think we do need to define them as an industry, I guess. But defining these within the organization and making sure people understand, everybody's on the same page. Call it whatever you want. Like, I don't particularly care. As long as everyone's aligned with what it means, where we're going, and how we know we got there.
This article goes on to talk about the history of digital transformation in healthcare. And it actually positions that this isn't new to us, right? We've been doing it for years. They even kind of highlight a very high level outline of digital transformation in healthcare starting in 2007 with the High Tech Act that was passed by Obama to drive towards digital. We've been doing this in healthcare since 2007. And it's understandable why, right? In healthcare, and particularly in health systems and the provider side of healthcare, there is a huge need to transform it to become digital. There's a high precedence here for us to do that.
Well, I mean, I think we have to because the industry's changing. The way people get paid are changing. Like we talked about earlier, the way we see providers or expect to see providers is changing.
And by the way, we are a big bloated industry, right? Global spending in healthcare, Deloitte predicts that by 2022, it's going to grow by 5.4% to be over $100 trillion. So guess what? We are creating products and services that is just phenomenally expensive. It's getting harder and harder to pay those bills if you're a patient. So no wonder we need to embrace digital transformation. But there are plenty of reasons why we in the system itself are mistaking the term of digital transformation as a fix to that problem. Let's talk about a few of them that they outline here.
So first one they talk about is they say, although digital record keeping is now the industry standard, the vision of a seamless solution with data shared between providers and able to be summoned in real time has proven elusive and even deadly.
Deadly.
That seems strong.
And so to that point, yes, we need to become digital first, but the whole, just the mere fact of digital record keeping being elusive and being unable to be done in our industry in and of itself means that we're spending lots more money trying to solve that problem. And so we're actually transforming our digital records so that they can become more operable. And yet we're unable to solve that problem because of all these disparate systems. Our EMRs don't talk to our CRMs effectively. All the data points that consumers are providing are not integrating into our data systems. And so that in and of itself is a reason why digital transformation is not going to solve this problem.
The second one they mention here, industry is still facing some significant risks that threaten the basic economics. So operating margins at hospitals are on the decline. They say largely due to cost control challenges and reductions in top line revenue growth.
So do you think digital transformation is going to solve that problem?
You know, I mean, it could have some influences, certainly, right? I mean, you talk about top line revenue growth. I mean, we've got to figure out how to get, you know, I guess, paid for some of the stuff that they do. That would help, I guess. But telemedicine, certainly, you know, I mean, you could have some supplemental type stuff, I guess.
But overall, the overhead, the supply chain, the physical aspects of the delivery of care is still a significant challenge. And yet 98% of patients in the health system, that's how they're consuming care. And so therefore, digital transformation may try to kind of cut away at the edges, like you said. But, you know, again, I think that we're mistakenly thinking that digital transformation is going to be the solution to that. The third thing here they say is that, and this is one right up your alley, Reed, consolidation in the industry is ongoing with mergers and acquisitions increasing by 14% over the past decade. These mergers and acquisitions put struggling hospitals at risk because it creates an obvious challenge for patients to not only access care, but the hospitals themselves are struggling to right size that equation, so to speak.
I think we'll continue, obviously, to see more and more mergers and acquisitions. What does that leave, especially around, you start talking about like social determinants of health? Shouldn't be the case that your likelihood to receive the care that you need is based on where you live, but we're seeing that bear out, especially in some rural areas. And so it's getting harder and harder for those small hospitals to survive.
And so, you know, again, digital transformation may not be the solution to that problem. Now, the last thing is wasteful spending remains an issue through poor inventory management, such as disposing of new or next to new medical supplies. That in and of itself is adding an estimated $765 billion per year to this industry. As much as we want to digitally transform that, it still is back to the nuts and bolts of inventory management, which is notoriously different than most of these digital transformation efforts that we're doing.
$765 billion, that's with a B. That's a lot of money. So yeah, I mean, it seems like there's a lot of leakage or waste there that could be shored up that digital transformation really plays much of a role in, other than just stewardship.
Let's be real here, right? This is a podcast about digital transformation. This is what we do. We're not going to sit here and say digital transformation is the wrong thing to do, are we?
Well, no. I mean, I think it's an extremely important piece, and I do think it can influence a lot of that. I don't think we have a choice around digital transformation. Like, it's what we're doing. You know, I mean, it's not like you really have the ability to say, we don't plan to go down that path. Like, you're going to have to. And a lot of that is based on consumerism, like we've talked about, and expectations and things like that. But we've got to do a couple of things to, you know, make sure that we're doing this the right way?
The first is to, you know, clearly define what that digital transformation objective is going to do. It's not enough to say we're going to be consumer first and we're going to be disruptive and we're going to, you know, you have to actually clearly define what those objectives are and have a goal in mind of what you're trying to solve. And sometimes it's hard to do because a lot of times digital transformation efforts are experimental in nature and you don't know what the end goal might be, but you certainly want to try to clearly define the objectives of your project.
And secondly, you know, to be reasonable with your expectations. So again, you talked about the experimental nature of some of this. We have to understand both from a timing and an outcomes perspective, what's reasonable.
Yeah, absolutely. And realize that, you know, that a lot of times as you're going through this transformation, you can't suddenly transform in 6 months, right? It's going to take some time. I mean, health systems, I may have said this before on the show, right? It's health systems are like steering an aircraft carrier, not a U-boat. You can't transform your entire marketing efforts through a digital transformation initiative just overnight. You got to take time. You got to set the objectives. You got to be reasonable with what you're going to get accomplished in the first 3 months or in this, you know, the first 6 months or whatever it might be. You got to really lay that out and set your expectations correctly. And by the way, also ensure that the organization itself is ready for that change. Because ultimately, you can't think of this as the end all be all, right? Digital transformation isn't the panacea to all the problems here. It can't solve your tightening revenues. It can't solve everything. It can certainly help, but you got to be careful about doing it, right?
Yeah. Or maybe it can do some of those things, but it's not going to do them tomorrow. It's a journey. And I think, you know, a lot of this is evolving pretty quickly, but much like technology tends to do, it outpaces things like legal compliance, reimbursement, you know, all that kind of stuff. We're in an interesting place and have an interesting opportunity being in the roles that we're in, that a lot of, we're kind of tip of the spear on a lot of the digital transformation pieces, or at least how people think about it. And so I think, you know, our interview today is going to be really interesting. I think John Burnt over at the Burnt Group, of course, most people know them as a group that builds really complex websites, but I think we're going to have a really cool conversation around kind of how some of this stuff is evolving.
And we'll do that right after the break.
All right, welcome back to Ask the Expert, the portion of the podcast where we get to talk to people that actually know what they're talking about. And today, excited to have back on the show, John Burnt from the Burnt Group. How's it going, man?
Going great. Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. So Chris and I have been talking about digital transformation. I'm just curious, what does digital transformation mean to you? Like when people talk about that, where does your mind go when you hear people talking about digital transformation?
In terms of what it means, in terms of what people actually do, I would say it's extremely varied how people use those words. The general reason that people use those words is they're trying to get their heads around a major sea change in their organization, which is going to address, hopefully, both of two things. The first thing being to catch up at all with consumer expectations. So like in healthcare, there's all these consumer expectations that are wildly out of whack with what really happens, especially in the digital space. So, you know, digital transformation is first and foremost about just even being on the same planet as the consumer, let's say. And then the second point is there's a tremendous pressure to, and it's expressed in different ways, but to disrupt the healthcare space, because there's a sense that the consumer expectations of today are not going to hold, and that the people who are going to do well in the next 5 years are the ones that get out in front of new consumer expectations or create the possibility for new consumer expectations. So, you know, they're looking for, you know, changes that are even more dramatic. And I can't tell you how many of our clients have come to us in the last couple of years and said, you know, the board of directors of our institution has told us we have to be the Amazon of healthcare, or we have to be the Facebook of healthcare, or whatever, you know, what's the plan and how fast can we get it done? You know, money's not an object. There's a lot of that that goes on, and it's tough because I think there's tremendous amount of really important good work that can be done. And that's obviously what my firm TBG, otherwise known as the Burnt Group, that's what we do all day long is help people actually make those digital transformations happen. But there is this kind of really high bar where people are wanting to do as a institution, like a large healthcare system or an academic medical center or something, they're wanting to do something that, you know, is comparable to what organizations that have had, you know, more than $1 billion in their R&D, you know, have done in other fields. So I think people are sort of talking about a little of both. They're talking about that catch up, and then they're also talking about, you know, how can we kind of get out ahead of the game? And that's very legitimate thing to want to do, because it's really the case that things are moving quickly, and it takes a long time to do these things. So, you know, these projects don't materialize overnight. So if you're not sort of planning ahead for something that's, you know, ahead of the curve, you'll shortly be, you know, even farther behind the curve, I guess, is the point. But there's a lot tactically involved in getting this kind of stuff figured out and done, for sure. And it's so different from, you know, organization to organization. The same words are used in really dramatically different ways.
They certainly are. Well, and not just around digital transformation, but in a lot of things, in a lot of cases, right? But, you know, specific to digital transformation, like, you know, how do we functionally start making that move? You know, what those enabling technologies or the pieces of the puzzle, if you will, like what should we be looking at, or kind of how does that start to evolve? Kind of what's that first step?
So I'm glad you asked, because this is a subject I've been thinking a lot about recently, and there's some things that are sort of moving in the answer. Like, there's some things that maybe are gaining traction that are new things that are becoming important. But the core things, I think, that are the kind of skeleton of digital transformation in terms of platforms and technologies, really come down to a couple different things. And keeping in mind that generally a lot of custom new development needs to take place. So people don't get away with just store-bought solutions, but have to build a lot of connectors and have to build a lot of custom applications and things like that along the way as well. I would say the main categories are customer experience platforms, which are what content management systems turned into about 5 or 6 years ago. So these would be platforms like Sitecore or Acquia Drupal, which are the two ones that we see most active in healthcare. These platforms, they manage structured content, and then if they're good, they allow you to present it in any kind of experience digitally. And then they also add on layers of tracking and profiling and being able to personalize the experience in complicated ways. And so the devil in the details of picking one of these platforms is figuring out, you know, how far you're going to go with some of these things like personalization, and how varied the user experiences you need to support are. And then also, of course, you know, you have to work within your budget and so forth. So there are other platforms out there. Adobe, which has very, very little footprint in healthcare. It's wildly expensive, but very powerful. And then there's some also RANs to Sitecore, like EpiServer and Kentico, but they have very limited abilities when you get into personalization, and they don't really scale over time, importantly, in those areas. So customer experience platforms are crucial. Then there is the layer that's represented by, I'm going to say as a sort of a duo, CRM, customer relations management software, of which Salesforce is the famous example, and marketing automation software. And often these things come bundled together, but not always. In general, the idea of CRM is that you have a working database of customers and prospects that contains the stuff you are allowed to use to market to them via HIPAA law. So they can't contain PHI. And maybe sometime on some other day, if you have time, we can have a conversation about how to figure out how to use customer data and personalization and automation and tracking without going astray in relation to HIPAA law. But in any case, so CRM is really the idea of having like a place where you have a concept of all the users that's safe to use in these digital interactions. And marketing automation is really similar type of thing, but building off of that and being able to do things like send emails or text messages, so forth. Then you've got your EMR systems, which are what the patient's secure interactions are happening with. So things like Epic, Cerner, and other portals. And those play a really huge role, but they're historically really complicated to work with in digital transformations because although they've exposed some things fairly directly, like Epic Open Scheduling, it's a popular product, and you can build things on top of that for real-time scheduling. They tend to be kind of like walled fortresses, and they're all about keeping the PHI separate from the rest of the world. So you have to do a lot of extra work to get them to play nicely in a digital transformation, which brings us to another piece of digital transformation, which is the world of API management solutions. Like for instance, a really good one is one called Redox, R-E-D-O-X. And this is like a layer, like a broker layer that allows you to manage all the relationships between different systems. And Redox is particularly notable because it's done that for the EMR systems, Epic and other EMR systems, to create something that you can, a developer can get going much more quickly on building applications that talk to what's in those EMR systems. Another class that's of software platform that's really important in digital transformations is Tableau.
I think we see that a little bit, right? I've been in and around some hospitals that are using that, but I typically don't see it in the marketing department.
Where the data practice lives relative to marketing or the CIO's office or the CTO's office or, you know, business analysts, that's always an interesting thing to look at. Yeah, I think one thing when I was describing what digital transformations are, I obviously left out a lot of different ways things can be thought of. But one thing that's really important, I think, in almost any digital transformation is there's a great increase in the practice around data-driven decision-making. Three key things that are important to make that work are, one, that there be the right integrations of data and that they be correctly scaled so that you're really looking at things in the same scales in a way that's meaningful. Two, that you have the visualization software, something like Tableau, that can get the sort of meaningful visual representations out of the data. And three, that you have people who are actually skilled in data analysis, you know, available to you, who are able to speak, you know, English and talk to other or whatever language you speak, and talk to other people in the team and, you know, can be a part of the conversation. If you get those three things together, it's really powerful. And it's a huge part of the digital transformations we're involved with. People build, you know, big data lake repositories and bring together EMR data, CRM data, behavioral data from their websites. And then they're able to do really powerful stuff with it and can also really affect how they view the user journeys on their digital properties and things like that as well. So usually there's also another layer in digital transformation, which is some kind of behavioral analytics. Sitecore has that built in to the customer experience platform, but people usually, even with that, usually are using something else like Google 360 or Google Analytics Data Studio, something like that. And the reason that that has to coexist with something like Tableau is that it's really, behavioral analytics are really specific, and you don't want to have to spend a ton of time creating custom reports in order to be able to quickly get at changes in behavior on your digital properties. So usually a robust practice is kind of a mix of all of those things that I just mentioned. And then there are other types of channels and delivery technologies that come into play. Chat and voice are really ascendant. We've been building a practice around those. There are chatbots like Loyal Healthcare is a great one. that are based around the use cases, have done the sort of machine learning around the use cases in healthcare, things like patient logistics and things along those lines. There are other more powerful platforms like Cognigy, which is a platform that's designed to allow you to manage the conversational logic, not just for chatbots, but also for things like phone trees and the conversational logic for the actual call center, and also for things like Alexa and Siri and other voice agents that might be talking to your organization. So these are really ascendant technologies, but they're also kind of early phase. I would say the last 2 years have been like this explosion of this stuff. And one of the crucial things is, if you get into these areas, is you have to have a really smart technical strategy for how to align these things to all the other technologies that we mentioned. Like, you want them showing up in your analytics. You want them, you know, getting the correct location data out of, you know, your customer experience engine. There's various other scenarios, but the idea is really that it's not, you know, running at odds with what you're telling people through other media, but it's all kind of aligned, speaking with one, you know, brand voice.
As you're kind of making, you know, I'm an organization, I've identified these different layers, different technologies. How do I know I'm making progress? You know, kind of towards the end goal.
I would say there's a couple ways that people think about that. I mean, one way is people have round trip tracking where they're looking at user interactions with these digital properties, and they're looking at some kind of anonymized metrics about things like, you know, the number of procedures that get done in different areas. And so as they're working on their digital transformation, they may be looking at goals that are, you know, macro or micro goals. So like a macro goal would be, we know we have a number of new hospitals in the region that are being built. They're going to be siphoning patients away from us. We need to make sure that we are losing the minimum number of patients by attrition. And so we need to engage the patients we already have with multiple service lines and have an ongoing relationship with them through marketing automation and an ongoing relationship with them through health education. And we also want to make sure we're targeting the right services to them that make sense with the other things that they've already used us for. That's sort of a macro goal. A micro goal might be, we want to do more bariatric surgeries. And so people need to be tracking those macro goals and micro goals, not just in terms of the, you know, the sort of superficial behavioral, you know, metrics, how much traffic did we generate, how many people stayed on the site for how long, but optimally tracking them all the way through to anonymized information about, you know, reimbursements and readmissions and all the other metrics that make sense for the business of healthcare. That's one way of doing it. It's a very quantitative way. I'd say there's a more qualitative way, which is, a lot of what we do is we do digital strategy and roadmap projects. And in those projects, we're working with the leadership of an organization to figure out a digital strategy and then to plot it out over time in a, like, you know, 3-year period. Sometimes 5-year period, but most often 3-year period. And then during that period, you know, an obvious metric that you can hold yourself to is, are we actually getting the things done that were in our roadmap? Like, you know, we were going to, by such and such time, we were going to promote telemedicine and have 10% of our online customers, you know, engaging with our telemedicine in some way, or, you know, we were going to shift, you know, half our call center traffic to online interactions with a chatbot and save money, or, you know, like those kinds of things that can be part of a roadmap that we might develop with a client based around, you know, what the challenges and opportunities are. You can tell if you're getting them done. Short of that, I think it's really easy to get bogged down, because there's a lot of complexity that you have to wrangle with here. And there's also a lot of snake oil in the market, you know, in the sense that, so a lot of like kind of big bloated systems that claim to do everything all at once and don't really do it. And, you know, then there's a lot of systems where people buy the software like CRM is a perfect example of something where people buy the software thinking they're going to get all these benefits, but they don't realize that they actually need a practice to go with that software. They need a CRM practice to go with that software. And finding people who you can staff a CRM practice with is not a super easy thing. There's a lot of challenges along the way, but you know, hopefully if you get good guidance and you follow those qualitative and quantitative ways of benchmarking yourself, you can at least understand what's happening and hopefully get up ahead of steam and get over some of those humps.
So if I'm listening today and in hearing a lot of this, and maybe I'm nowhere on this roadmap currently, what is the one thing that once I get to work today, once I get through listening to this podcast, whatever it is, what's the one thing I should go do, look at, conversation I should have? You know, what's that initial step to determine where I should go from here?
I'm not sure if I can get it all the way down to one, but I'm going to get it down to two for you. Is that okay?
Fair enough.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I can't really tell you what the priority of these are, but they're just both so foundational. So I would say the absolute sort of zero degree of digital transformation, it comes down to two things. It comes down to having the content in your digital experiences in a structured form. And what I mean by that is it's not just big pages, hand-coded pages of old web pages or something like that. It's really thoughtfully broken up into individual fields in some sort of system, a content management system or, you know, something else, but probably content management / customer experience management system. And what that enables you to do is it gives you a handhold or leverage over your ability to do anything with that content in the future, in other channels, in other apps, in emails, anywhere. Doesn't necessarily, you know, clear the path completely because there's other things involved, but it's a precondition for being able to go on that path. And then the second thing is really CRM, I would say, or maybe let's just say more generally, a structured conception of the user that has been filtered to be the information that you're allowed to market to, customer, patient. You know, it's really a combination of having a CMS and a CRM, even if they're rudimentary, even if they're separate from one another completely and not integrated in any way, even if they're not the absolute, you know, best products. And having that information about customers in a structured format and that information on the actual content that of the institution in a structured format. And having those two things in a structured format means that you can start to leverage technology to do things that human beings can't do, like have a relatively personalized interaction with 5,000 people in your market, or publish the same content really efficiently to 12 different places in 5 different channels. That's where the rubber hits the road. Beyond that, there's a lot of things involved that require a lot of strategy and hiring and roadmaps and, you know, thoughtful planning and so forth. So, but if you can get those two things done, you're at least, you know, you're on the path, let's say.
Man, it's a lot of great info, a lot of great things to think about, plan towards, do. Appreciate you coming on and spending a few minutes. Those that want to talk further, want to hear more, want to reach out, what's the best way for them to connect with you?
Yeah, so I would say if you come to our website, it's www.berndtgroup.net. The company is generally referred to as TBG. You can also see me on Twitter at R John Berndt, RJOHNBERNDT.
Awesome. And we'll make sure to put that in the show notes as well. And, well, man, thanks for coming on and spending a few minutes, and look forward to catching up in person at the next conference. But, thanks for doing it and look forward to having you back on.
Yep. Thanks a lot, Reed. Take care.
All right, special thanks to John Berndt over the Berndt Group. Always appreciate him coming on. We're starting to get people that are somewhat regulars, I guess, yeah, that have been on more than once. Mm-hmm. And John's always good for some deep thoughts around the industry that we're in and kind of what we're tasked with. So I appreciate him coming on. A couple of things before we get to recommendations. Again, we're starting to kind of make our way through the fall season. And so we've been to a few conferences. We've got a few left. The next one is in just a few short days at this point, but it's the 2019 Mayo Clinic Social Media Network Annual Conference, which is October 21st through the 23rd, kind of depending on if you're coming for the residency or the conference and some of those types of things, up in beautiful Rochester, Minnesota. You can learn more over socialmedia.mayoclinic.org. We'll obviously link to it in the show notes, but one that Chris and I look forward to every year.
Well, Reed, because we're getting snow this weekend, you might be in luck when you come up here to get a little bit of that fall slash winter weather of Minnesota. So.
Wow, it's 90 in Texas. I'll just keep reporting Texas weather.
All right. But then a couple weeks later, you and I will also be at the Healthcare Internet Conference. Just the last episode, we interviewed the two people organizing that conference. Jump back if you haven't heard it yet and go listen to that to learn what's going to be there. But we're excited to be in Orlando, Florida, on November 4th through the 6th, and talking all things healthcare and internet. Well, internet is an outdated term, but all things healthcare and digital, I guess, in this particular case. We'll be there in full force, and we're looking forward to connecting with some of the people that that we have had on the show before. And if you are interested in reaching out to us and learning out a little bit more, we're actually going to be recording a live episode at the podcast and then featuring that later. But if you want to be a part of that podcast or a part of the audience, reach out to us. Let us know. We'll be interested in having you on.
Absolutely. Great stuff. Let's do a couple recommendations before we get out of here. I teased mine kind of at the top of the show, I guess. But I did download, because I use a Mac laptop computer, download the new operating system, Mac OS Catalina. You know, there's some interesting kind of additions feature-wise, I guess. But, well, there's a couple of them that I found pretty interesting. One's called Sidecar, so you can, like, use your iPad as a secondary monitor, which is kind of interesting. I'm not sure how useful it is, but it's kind of an interesting feature. And you can do it through Bluetooth and that kind of thing. So it doesn't have to actually be wired to your computer, which is kind of interesting. But what I kind of mentioned at the top of the show is they've actually done away with iTunes as you know it. So they've kind of busted up. There's like Apple TV, the app now, and some of those types of things. Anyway, they have podcasting in its own app. They've introduced some new categorization over the previous weeks or months, I guess. And so there's an entire app now on your Mac computer, like you would have historically had on your phone, just for podcasting.
That is really awesome. You know, I've been using different apps for my podcast, but I might have to jump back to the native Apple app now. And the reason why I was doing it is because iTunes just became too bloated. And now maybe I need to come back and revisit the podcast app. That's a good recommendation.
I'll be interested to see kind of what they do with it over time. But it is kind of a neat way to look at and kind of sort through some stuff on your desktop.
Well, you know, wouldn't you know it, my recommendation is actually going to be about the new iOS, on both the Catalina on your iMac and then also the new one that's on your phone and on your iPad as well. And what I'm going to recommend is a feature of it called dark mode. Have you set up your new Macs to be dark mode yet?
Yes. Yeah, I've been using dark mode. Absolutely.
Well, now, so that's not a new feature. A lot of different apps and different things have it. I know that dark mode's been on Google as well for a while. Now with the new OS, I'm using dark mode almost exclusively now on my Mac, on my iPad, and on my phone. And what I love about it is it's not only native to your phone or to your computer. The dark mode is not only like a theme of your apps, it can actually transcend and get into your apps themselves. And so I've not only turned on it for the iOS, I've turned it on for Instagram, for example. So now my Instagram is in dark mode. And so that means it's not all white, right? It's got the black on the background. It goes into your email clients now too. And so now there's even within the email client I use for work, which is Outlook, as well as the personal one I use, which is Spark, it has dark mode. you could set everything up now to be dark mode. And so what's great about that is it's easier on your eyes. It allows you to read things a little bit much more seamlessly. I just find it to be a little bit better. I don't have to take that little break in the afternoon because of a headache. I still take a break away from my computer, but now it's a little bit more sensitive on my eyes. So I'm recommending dark mode.
Well, there you go. Excellent recommendation. I got kind of nerdy there for a minute on the new operating systems, but it's worth your it's worth your time all the way around.
Sorry about that.
No, it's great. Well, thanks for hanging in with us another week. We certainly appreciate everyone that listens. Really excited about the couple of conferences we have coming up and getting to see some folks in person. Again, jump out to the website, touchpoint.health. Rate, review, subscribe wherever you happen to listen. Chris Boyer, I'm Reed Smith, and we'll see you next week.
This has been a Touchpoint Media production. To learn more about this show and others like it, please visit us online at touchpoint.health.